A Boy That Visited Fairyland, a Welsh fairy tale collected by William Elliot Griffiths. Many are the places in Wales where the ground is lumpy and humpy, with tumuli or little artificial mounds. Among these the sheep graze, the donkeys bray, and the cows chew the cud. Here the ground is strewn with the ruins of cromlechs or Cymric strongholds, of old Roman camps, of chapels and monasteries, showing that many different races of men have come and gone, while the birds still fly and the flowers bloom. Centuries ago, the good monks of St. David had a school where lads were taught Latin and good manners. One of their pupils was a boy named Elidir. He was such a poor scholar, and he so hated books and loved play, that in his case spankings and whippings were almost of daily occurrence. Still, he made no improvement. He was in the habit also of playing truant, or what one of the monks called traveling to Baghdad. One of the consequences was that certain soft parts of his body, apparently provided by nature for this express purpose, often received a warming from his daddy. His mother loved her boy dearly, and she often gently chided him, but he would not listen to her, and when she urged him to be more diligent, he ran out of the room. The monks did not spare the birch rod, and soon it was a case of a whipping for every lesson not learned. One day, though he was only 12 years old, the boy started on a long run into the country. The further he got, the happier he felt, at least for one day. At night, tired out, he crept into a cave. When he woke up in the morning, he thought it was glorious to be as free as the wild asses. So, like them, he quenched his thirst at the brook. But when, towards noon, he could find nothing to eat, and his inside cavity seemed to enlarge with very emptiness, his hunger grew every minute. Then he thought that a bit of oat cake, a leek, or a bowl of oatmeal, whether porridge or flummery, might suit a king. He dared not go out far and pick berries, for by this time he saw that people were out searching for him. He did not feel yet like going back to books, rods, and scoldings, but the day seemed as long as a week. Meanwhile, he discovered that he had a stomach which seemed to grow more and more into an aching void. He was glad when the sunset and darkness came. His bed was no softer in the cave, as he lay down with a stone for his pillow, yet he had no dreams like those of Jacob and the angels. When daylight came, the question in his mind was still whether to stay and starve or go home and get 2 thrashings, one from his daddy and another from the monks. But how about that thing inside of him which seemed to be a live creature gnawing away, and which only something could eat would quiet? Finally he came to a stern resolve. He started out ready to face 2 whippings rather than 1 death by starvation. But he did not have to go home yet, for at the cave's mouth he met 2 elves who delivered a most welcome message. "Come with us to a land of fun, play, and good things to eat." All at once his hunger left him, and he forgot that he ever wanted to swallow anything. All fear or desire to go home or to risk either schooling or a thrashing passed away also. Into the dark passage all 3 went, but they soon came out into a beautiful country. How the birds sang and the flowers bloomed! All around could be heard the joyful shouts of little folks at play. Never did things look so lovely. Soon, in front of the broad path along which they were traveling, there rose up before him a glorious palace. It had a splendid gateway, and the silver-topped tower seemed to touch the blue sky. "What building is this?" asked the lad of his 2 guides. They made answer that it was the palace of the King of Fairyland. Then they led him into the throne room, where, set in golden splendor, a king of august figure and of majestic presence, who was clad in resplendent robes. He was surrounded by courtiers in rich apparel, and all about him was magnificent, such as this boy Elidir had never ever read about or dreamed. Yet everything was so small that it looked like toyland, and he felt like a giant among them, even though many of the little men around him were old enough to have whiskers on their cheeks and beards on their chins. The king spoke kindly to Elidir, asking him who he was and whence he had come. While talking thus, the prince, the king's only son, appeared. He was dressed in white velvet and gold, and had a long feather in his cap. In the pleasantest way, he took Elidir's hand and said, "Glad to see you. Come and let us play together." That was just what Elidir liked to hear. The king smiled and said to his visitor, "You will attend my son?" Then, with a wave of his hand, he signified to the boys to run out and play games. A right merry time they did have, for there were many other little fellows for playmates. These wee folks with whom Elidir played were hardly as big as our babies, and certainly could not reach up to his mother's knee. To them he looked like a giant, and he richly enjoyed the fun of having such little men, but with beards growing on their faces, look up to him. They played with golden balls and rode little horses with silver saddles and bridles, but these pretty animals were no larger than small dogs or greyhounds. No meat was ever seen on the table, but always plenty of milk. They never told a lie nor used bad language or swear words. They often talked about mortal men, but usually to despise them, because what they liked to do seemed so absurd, and they always wanted foolish and useless things. To the elves, human beings were never satisfied or long happy, even when they got what they wanted. Everything in this part of Fairyland was lovely, but it was always cloudy. No sun, star, or moon was ever seen. Yet the little men did not seem to mind it and enjoyed themselves every day. There was no end of play, and that suited Elidir. Yet by and by he got tired even of games and play and grew very homesick. He wanted to see his mother. So he asked the king to let him visit his old home. He promised solemnly to come back after a few hours. His majesty gave his permission, but charged him not to take with him anything whatever from Fairyland, and to go with only the clothes on his back. The same two elves or dwarves who'd brought him into Fairyland were chosen to conduct him back. When they had led him again through the underground passage into the sunlight, they made him invisible until he arrived at his mother's cottage. She was overjoyed to find that no wolf had torn him to pieces or wild bull had pushed him over a precipice. She asked him many questions, and he told her all he had seen, felt, or known. When he rose up to go, she begged him to stay longer, but he said he must keep his word. Besides, he feared the rod of the monks or his daddy if he remained. So he made his mother agree not to tell anything, not even to his father, as to where he was or what he was doing. Then he made off and reported again to his playmates in Fairyland. The king was so pleased at the lad's promptness in returning and keeping his word and telling the truth, that he allowed him to go see his mother as often as he wanted to do so. He even gave orders releasing the two little men from constantly guarding him, and told them to let the lad go alone, and when he would, for he always kept his word. Many times did Elidir visit his mother. By one road or another he made his way, keeping himself invisible all the time until he got inside her cottage. He ran off when anyone called in to pay a visit, or when he thought his daddy or one of the monks was coming. He never saw any of these men. One day, in telling his mother of the fun and good times he had in Fairyland, he spoke of the heavy yellow balls with which he and the king's son played, and how these rolled around. Before leaving home, the boy had never seen any gold and did not know what it was. But his mother guessed that it was the precious metal of which the coins called sovereigns and worth $5 apiece were made. So she begged him to bring one of them back to her. This Illidir thought would not be right, but after much argument, his parents being poor, and she telling him that out of hundreds in the king's palace one single ball would not be missed, he decided to please her. So one day, when he supposed no one was looking, he picked up one of the yellow balls and started off through the narrow, dark passageway home. But no sooner was he back on earth and in the sunlight again than he heard footsteps behind him. Then he knew he had been discovered. He glanced over his shoulder, and there were the two little men who had led him first and formerly had been his guards. They scowled at him as if they were mad enough to bite off the heads of tenpenny nails. Then they rushed after him, and there began a race to the cottage. But the boy had legs twice as long as the little men and got to the cottage door first. He now thought himself safe, but pushing open the door, he stumbled over the copper threshold, and the ball rolled out of his hand across the floor of hardened clay, even to the nearly whitewashed border which ran about the edges of the room. It stopped at the feet of his mother, whose eyes opened wide at the sight of the ball of shining gold. As he lay sprawling on the floor, and before he could pick himself up, one of the little men leaped over him, rushed into the room, and from under his mother's petticoats picked up the ball. They spat at the boy and shouted, "Traitor, rascal, thief, false mortal, fox, rat, wolf, and other bad names." Then they turned and sped away. Now Illidir, though he had been a mischievous boy, often willful, lazy, and never liking his books, had always loved the truth. He was very sad and miserable beyond the telling because he had broken his word of honor. So almost mad with grief and shame, and from an accusing conscience, he went back to find the cave in which he had slept. He would return to the king of the fairies and ask his pardon, even if his majesty never allowed him to visit fairyland again. But though he often searched and spent whole days in trying to find the opening in the hills, he could never discover it. So fully penitent and resolving to live right and become what his father wanted him to be, he went back to the monastery. There he plied his tasks so diligently that he excelled in all his book learning. In time he became one of the most famous scholars in Welsh history. When he died, he asked to be buried not in the monks' cemetery, but with his father and mother in the churchyard. He made request that no name, record, or epitaph be chiseled on his tomb, but only these words: "We can do nothing against the truth, but only for the truth."